Then you have a son. He smiled.
Is that the way it works, Grandpa?
No. Well, yep. But it's worse than that, Henry. Vic talked to the doctors at Rapid, and their considered opinion is that Bodaway's injuries are serious enough that they don't think he's coming back. His big hand covered the bottom of his face, and he mumbled through his fingers, his eyes still on me.
No chance?
They seemed to indicate none. He breathed a laugh that would have frozen sagebrush.
That would be about right. I would have had a son for 30 years, and the weekend I was to first meet him, he would go into a coma with no hope of awakening.
Do a blood test. He let his hand fall to his lap.
I am not much of a test taker these days.
So what are you going to do? He looked away.
Go by my feelings.
Just so you know, that's usually what you warned me not to do.
Am I usually right?
Only 99% of the time.
So, we have an obvious fact.
We talked for another 20 minutes, until I felt the pressure of a revolver muzzle pressed into my right ear and heard a very angry voice.
Did you hit me?
Fortunately, Henry's first move was to grab Dog's collar, or else the 150-pound brute would have launched off the bench to sink his teeth into the arm of the individual I figured was holding the .38 in my ear. Instead, Dog pulled back his lips in a promise. I raised the beer and took a sip, attempting my best Leo Gordon.
Have a seat, kiddo, and I'll buy you a beer.
He nudged the 2-inch barrel farther into my ear canal with his left hand and repeated the question,
Did you hit me, motherfucker?
Setting the Rainier down, I slowly turned, and he traced the muzzle across my cheek until it now rested on the bridge of my nose. His face was red, and all I could think was, how did he get away from Dougherty, and where did he get the sidearm after I'd checked him?
Why, yes, I did.
If it was possible, his face grew even redder, and I was calculating what my next tactical move would be. The saloon was crowded, and I didn't want anyone else to be hurt, which meant I would have to kick him at the same time I grabbed the revolver, shoving it upward, flipping it, and pushing it into his body so that if he did pull the trigger, the only one who would be hit with a round would be himself.
You sucker-punched me, cocksucker?
It is a risky business. But the alternatives weren't so great. I was about to make my move when a hand shot out, bent Billy V's up and back, snatched the revolver out of his hand before either of us could breathe, then cried havoc and let slip the dog of war. When primates are properly motivated, we can move with the best of them. And Billy V. Kiddo was highly motivated. Scrambling backward, he pulled a neighboring table down in front of him, which succeeded in deflecting Dog to the right just long enough for Kiddo to turn and lunge for the alley. Most everybody in the bar, realizing that a were-monster had been loosed, vacated the immediate area in what I assumed would be an attempt to acquire torches and pitchforks. Having the advantage of 4 legs, Dog caught his balance, turned to the left, and shot for the alley, where V was desperately attempting to flee. Me? I sipped my beer. Henry examined the revolver.
Odd gun.
He handed it to me. Consider it a gift. I took the thing without looking. There was a great deal of noise from the passageway where the 2 antagonists had disappeared, and then 1 agonizing scream.
I guess I'd better go see about that.
Henry sipped his sparkling water and studied the paper on the table.
I suppose you should.
It was about then that I looked down and saw the pink grip of the .38 revolver.
Where did he get this gun?
Dougherty looked at the colorful sidearm. He had a gun? Holding the pistol out to him, I glanced around the Hewlett Police Department's empty office. When Kiddo stormed into the bar, he shoved the barrel of this in my ear.
You searched him?
I figured you would have found it if he'd been carrying.
That's right, I would have. He must have gotten it after you got him up and loaded him into the car. Who else was there?
Nobody. Who helped you load him? Nutter, but Chief Nutter and a highway patrolman.
You didn't cuff him?
I did, but when I got him back to the jail here and was walking him in, he was suddenly loose and elbowed me in the face.
You're lucky you're alive.
I gestured toward the holding cell.
Nobody came near him, touched him, anything?
No, wait, he thought about it. When I got him over here, there were a bunch of bikers out front.
Men, women?
Both. They whooped and hollered and patted him on the back as I was bringing him in. He studied my face. You're thinking,
was Lola one of them?
I don't think so, but maybe. I'm not sure why. I twirled the revolver.
Because this is hers.
He walked to the back where an EMT was tending to Billy the Kiddo as he lay on his stomach on a bunk, his left wrist attached to a chain support with a pair of cuffs, and his pants pulled down, exposing his perforated posterior.
I'm gonna own this town when I'm through with you fuckers.
I knelt beside him. Just a little more piercing done. What's the harm?
Fuck you! You aren't supposed to be anywhere near me. I've got a restraining order.
I don't think that restraining order works when you push gun barrels in my ear.
He grimaced and cried out as the EMT continued to stitch him up.
You hit me!
I ignored the outburst and held up the pink revolver.
This gun.
He stared at it and then at me.
I never seen that gun before.
I've got a whole bar full of witnesses who saw you holding it in my ear before my friend Henry took it away from you.
Yeah, and I've got an entire alley full of people who saw you punch me in the head.
I sounded bored even to myself. As you resisted arrest and attempted to visit grievous harm on Officer Dougherty here. I leaned in closer. The old buddy, where did you get the gun? You see, I know who owns it. And I'm betting you do, too. Now, if she gave it to you, that'll make it a lot easier in that I won't have to worry about where she might be if you took it away from her.
Go fuck yourself.
I stood and gestured to get the EMT's attention. When you get done, you can sew up this end, too. Walking back into the bullpen, I turned to Corbin. Put a general out for Lola and that gold caddy. She doesn't strike me as a type to go around unarmed. He sat in a dejected manner and pulled the old stand-up mic toward him. I screwed up pretty bad, huh?
Not really. So far the only one who got hurt in all of this is the human Kong in there.
I shrugged as another yelp emanated from the holding cell. And I'd say he deserved it.
What are you going to do?
I spread my hands. Where in the world is Lola Wojciechowski? The bear and dog were waiting for me outside, leaning on the M-wrap as a group of bikers observed the two of them from a distance.
Are they going to have to put thee down?
I wish.
What is next?
I held up the revolver. Any ideas? He glanced down the hill at the throngs of black leather, his eyes narrowing.
Is there a pool table in this town?
I stepped back toward the office door and yanked it open. Corbin, is there a pool table around here somewhere? Captain Ron's rodeo bar in the back past the dance floor.
Got it.
I shut the door and gestured down the hill. Conveniently located 100 feet that way. The bear started off with dog.
I wonder, in the course of recent developments, if they will allow pets.
We stopped at a large barn door opening into another outside beer garden. I keep telling you he's a service dog. The bouncer at the door, an amiable-looking cowboy almost as wide as he was tall, asked,
And what service does he provide?
Bomb detection.
He shook his head.
Works for me. There are plenty of them going off in there.
Dodging inside with the beast, we angled to the right and could see Lola taking a shot and stretching across the far side pocket, revealing more than a little décolletage to the admiring members of the sporting life.
Lola!
Even I was taken aback by the thunder of the Cheyenne Nation's voice in the raucous noise and music of the Fill to the Gills bar. She took a second to steady herself and then took the shot with her custom cue, a banking roller that sunk the two ball in the farthest corner. She stood, cocked a leg and rested her hip against the table as Big Easy, the guard biker we had last met at the hospital, stepped into our line of sight, speaking in a slight Samoan accent. "Problem?" I held the revolver up. "A pink one." "Not your color, my man." I nodded past him toward Lola. "No, but it's hers. Tell her we'll meet her outside, and not to make me come looking for her, or I'll see she gets 7 months of high-security, low-amenity lodging in Sundance." As we started to turn and walk out, the Big and Easy Samoan reached over and touched Henry's shoulder, the arm attached, having powered the biker's head into the drywall of the Rapid City Regional Hospital. "I know you?" The bear smiled, the one crease at the corner of his mouth smile.
"Momentarily."
We waited by the door longer than I would have liked, but she finally came sauntering out and stood with her arms crossed.
"I'd like my gun back."
I glanced at the revolver tucked in my belt. "You mind telling me how he got it?"
"How who got it?"
"Star of stage screen and reality TV, Billy V. Kiddo."
"And who the hell is Billy V. Kiddo?"
"A good friend of your son's."
She wrapped her arms around herself and came closer.
"Define good."
"Bodaway called him about 17 times before the accident, if indeed it was an accident."
She straightened up and dropped her arms.
"Look, I honestly don't know what you're talking about, let alone who you're talking about. You put the gun inside my purse in my car's glove box the last time I saw it."
"Your car, this gun, it kind of lacks with your possessions."
She glanced at the Cheyenne Nation.
"What can I say? I'm just a material girl in a material world."
The crypt voice returned beside me with enough timber to fill the black forest.
"Lola, there are lives at stake."
She snorted.
"That's funny, because that's what I've been trying to convince you of for days."
She hooked her thumbs into the belt loops of her jeans and turned coquettishly to me.
"Imagine my surprise. I came here looking for a red knight in shining armor, and all I find is a Watson to your Sherlock Holmes. Feel free to put my gun back where you found it."
With this final pronouncement, she turned and rejoined the swarm in the bar with her hands raised above her head, snapping her fingers, swaying, and singing to Jerry Lee Lewis's CeCe Ryder. He stood there for a while before he handed me the leash. "I'm starting to see how this relationship didn't work out."
"Yes."
"I'm sorry." He glanced at me.
"For what?"
"Trying to get you involved in this. It was stupid, and I didn't really know what I was getting you into."
"She is something of a contagion."
I nodded and rubbed Dog's head. "Let's go get you a blood test at the Rapid Hospital tomorrow and put this all to rest. Then we can head home."
"Deal."
We turned and began walking the rest of the way down the hill, stopping at the corner and waiting for another assemblage of motorcycles to go by.
"It is funny, but I was just getting used to the idea of being a father, even if it was with Lola."
I studied him, and he began talking again.
"I watch you with Katie."
"Well, she's yours, too," I sighed. "Sometimes I think she's more yours than mine."
"But she is not."
We crossed the street, and I thought I'd better lighten the subject matter. "Starting to have regrets concerning your ill-spent youth?" He smiled.
"No, no. I just sometimes wonder."
"What your life could have been like?"
"Yes."
"Take my advice, don't do that." Pulling up Dog in front of the Ponderosa Cafe, I turned and looked at him.
"Regret is my turf, buddy."
He smiled a little more broadly.
"Sorry."
"You were right about steering clear of her, and I drove us right back in there." We began walking again.
"It's your maiden in distress syndrome. You have a difficult time resisting."
I laughed. "Yep. But I'm starting to get the idea that Lola is the kind that ties people to the railroad tracks."
"One of the disadvantages of operating in the contemporary American West is that not all the bad guys have handlebar mustaches."
He crossed the last street toward the motel, and walked across the parking lot toward the cabins on the end near the river, where we saw Lola's gold 66 Caddy parked in the grass. The mist from the Belle Fouche almost hid the thing, but the moonlight glistened off the chrome and quarter panels like jewelry. Evidently she also has unique ideas on parking. I pulled the pink-gripped revolver from my belt and handed it to him. Here, you can put it in her glove box.
You are giving it back to her?
I jiggled my jacket with the 5 rounds rattled in my pocket. Empty. He palmed the thing, and started off toward the car, only to stop. I stood there looking after him in the half-mist. Something? He gestured with an open hand, leading me to follow.
Someone. In the car.
We both walked over to the convertible. ATF Field Agent Brady Post was sitting in the passenger seat, his head turned to the side with his eyes closed and his mouth gaping open, looking like he was snoring and dead asleep. On closer inspection, however, he was simply dead. A hole in his chest. Chapter 10. We couldn't decide what we were going to do with the caddy, so we leaned against it.
Need I remind you that what we have here is a dead federal agent?
I'm aware of that, but I'm also aware that if this goes public, whoever did it is going to go to ground and we'll never find out what was happening here, let alone who's responsible.
What do you suggest?
They have a vehicle shop at the Hewlett Police Department.
The tin shed?
He studied me.
You want to move both the body and the car as well?
I glanced over my shoulder toward the bridge, where traffic had appeared to have disappeared, it being the wee hours. We drive him up there, and then I'll contact McGroder, the AIC in Denver. Henry looked back at the dead agent and shrugged. We'll say we were trying to maintain the integrity of the crime scene.
By driving it across town.
I held a palm up, feeling for imaginary drops. It might rain. He shook his head and reached for dog's leash.
You have gloves?
I pulled a well-worn pair that I used to shoot with from my jacket. If you would, put dog in the room and try and not wake up, Vic. I'll meet you at the cop shop. He inclined his head.
You are not going to give me a ride?
I skimmed off my jacket as I walked toward Post and carefully placed it over the agent's head.
You were the one getting squeamish. I'm over that now. Pick me up in the motel lot.
And off he went with dog. I watched the two of them walk away and then turned back to Brady Post, kneeled down and looked at him.
What did you get into?
I rested my chin on my arm and studied the dead man, a dull ache starting to form behind my eyes. And what was it that was important enough to kill you for? I leaned in close and did something I rarely did.
I'm sorry, but if I'm going to get whoever did this, I'm not going to be able to follow protocol.
I patted his arm and gave it a squeeze. But then, you didn't strike me as a by-the-book kind of guy. I climbed in the car, started her up, and gently spun the wheels. Easing the accelerator, I backed onto the parking lot and headed for the area between the two buildings. When I pulled on the headlights, the two car thieves were standing in my way. The shady one who was with the Viking was the first to speak. Where are you going with Lola's car?
I'm parking it in a safe place as opposed to down by the river.
He continued to talk as Eddie fidgeted. Does she know that? Everyone in the Western Hemisphere has been driving this car this week, and you guys are going to question me? I rubbed my hand across my face. Who are you anyway? A friend of Lola's?
Really?
The thick-tempered voice came from behind them, low but loud enough to straighten their backs. The Cheyenne Nation draped an arm over each man.
Because I am a friend of Lola, too, and I do not remember seeing either of your names on the guest list.
They were silent, staring at the asphalt as the weight of his arms curved their spines.
I will tell you what. When we see Lola next, we will tell her you said hello. Eddie the Viking and
He hugged the other man, but he didn't appear to want to speak.
And?
I watched as Henry's forearm muscles bunched and the man's face was drawn in close to the bear's.
Phil Vesco!
Henry loosened his grip.
Eddie and Phil went up the hill. I will be sure to recommend you to Lola for your sterling service.
I watched as he undraped himself and walked around the car. After slowly getting into the back seat behind the cloaked man in the front, he waved goodbye to the two road agents.
He's what?
He's dead. Corbin Dougherty's voice rose as he unlocked the steel doors leading to the maintenance shed behind the department's main structure.
Who killed him?
We're not clear on that, at least not yet. He pulled the doors back and flipped the lights on inside.
He's a federal agent?
Yep.
How do you know?
I turned my head and Henry and I looked at each other for that briefest of moments as I pulled the Cadillac into the two-bay garage. He introduced himself to us. Corbin rapidly closed the doors.
Do they normally do that?
Not generally.
I climbed out and Henry flipped the seat and followed. But the other night at the motel he badged us. He's ATF, and working on some kind of gun-running scheme that Bodaway Taurus might have been involved with in Arizona.
Our Bodaway Taurus?
Yep.
His face was the picture of bewilderment.
Smuggling guns into Wyoming?
Henry and I looked at each other again. Kind of sounds like coal to Newcastle, doesn't it? Look, maybe it's not that particularly, but something is going on. And the only way we'll find out what it is by keeping Agent Post's death under wraps. He looked at the enormous car and the dead man.
For how long?
I'll ask Mike Novo to get a cashier and some bag boys up from DCI in Cheyenne and have them begin a preliminary while I get hold of the agency in Denver. Maybe my friends in the FBI can get some information from the ATF and we can get a little more to go on. I could see them having that response to me personally, but what in the world could they possibly have against the horse I rode in on?
Was that an official response from the ATF?
Agent in charge Mike Magruder laughed on the phone from Denver.
Pretty much. It would be different if we were all on the same team, but you know, Walt, the federal government is more like a loose coalition of warring tribes.
Did they even admit that he was theirs?
No. And with the number of CIs surrounding them, it's going to be like a minefield as to who knew what he was and who didn't.
CIs?
Confidential informants. That's the way these guys get in, and it's how they get their information.
What are the chances that he's not ATF at all?
Difficult to say, but if he's out of the Phoenix area, I can make some calls to the RAC and the ASAC. I know the guy in charge down there, and he might be a little more motivated, especially if I tell him one of his agents is dead.
I continued to advance my education.
RAC? Resident Agent in Charge.
ASAC?
Assistant Special Agent in Charge.
Is that what you guys do in your spare time? Sit around and make up acronyms? I sighed. I'm trying to keep this from becoming a circus. I understand you don't want this to turn into a no-and-go, but the ATF Special Response Team is going to want its pound of flesh on this, Walt. There was a pause.
With a vengeance.
I looked out the Hewlett Police Department's windows. The outside as black as a mine except for the ghostly white fender of the Pequod.
That's fine, but you know as well as I do that if the feds come in here in force, then whoever did it is going to fold up the tents.
There was a pause.
That puts a lot of pressure on you to find out who did it before that happens.
Yep, it does. I hung up the phone and turned to look at Henry.
The game is afoot.
I sighed. I wish you'd stop doing that. Dougherty sat on another chair and looked at us.
What now?
I glanced at the clock on the wall. The DCI crew should be here in a few hours.
Before 8?
I doubt it. Why? Incredulous, he looked at me.
Because then my chief shows up and I have to explain what a Cadillac and a dead ATF agent are doing in our maintenance shed.
Blame it on me.
He nodded his head emphatically. I intend to.
Well, in answer to your question, I think one of the key elements in the investigation is back in your holding cell.
I glanced at Corbin.
He is still back in your holding cell, right?
Who?
Kiddo.
Oh, him. Yeah, he's back there.
My thought began dawning on him.
Why? Are you thinking he's part of this?
I don't know, but there's a connection between him and Bodaway, and a connection between Bodaway and a dead ATF agent. I'm thinking we'd take advantage of having the owner-proprietor of the chop shop in the holding cell and snoop around and see what he and Bodaway might have had going on over there. I shrugged. And we can take the Pennington County Sheriff's unit back to him. As far as I know, Vic's race car is still in their impound lot. Henry and I gathered up as Corbin threw me the keys to the Tahoe.
What do I tell the chief other than it's all your fault?
That should do it for now. I paused at the door. If we don't make it back before the DCI guys get here, just park their vehicle in front of the shed door and try and get them in there as quietly as possible. I reached out and handed him the pink-gripped revolver. The first thing I want to know is the caliber of the weapon that did the deed. He stared at the S&W.
You think it was this?